Welcome to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. And now, experience the good life today.
Aloha from Honolulu, Hawaii. I'm Danny Yamashiro. Welcome to The Good Life. We're here to help unleash your God-given purpose. What happens when you hear how stories fit together and you realize that they are describing miracle after miracle and they're all intertwined, fit together? Don Piper was under a black tarp, pronounced dead. He had actually gone to heaven. A man by the name of Dick Honorecker was led by God to go pray for him. The EMT specialist said, you know, there's no need for you to do that. The man is dead. And there he was. But God had given a strong word to Dick Honorecker, and Dick went in faith and obedience, crawled up under that tarp. It was a macabre scene. That's why they had to cover it all the more. He lays his hands on Don Piper, and he begins to pray. And as he prays, he begins to sing. 90 minutes had elapsed. And that's why Don Piper's book is entitled 90 Minutes in Heaven. With Dick Honorecker being obedient to God, God performed another miracle. You're listening to part two of a two-part feature. 90 Minutes in Heaven is a national best-selling book. It's soon to be released as a movie. Don and Eva Piper are in studio with me in this pre-recorded interview as they continue to explain the marvels of what God did through their story in this point of our interview. They're explaining how it all weaved together and how it began to change Dick Honorecker's prayer life, his ministry life, by learning to pray specifically.
So this is all kind of just exploding in front of us. And even though it was a credible story of a, you know, pastor who felt led to get in the car and pray over a dead body, even though he's told it was, you know, he prayed and I came back, it's even getting more unbelievable by the moment. As and for him and his family, and Anita, who was an eyewitness to all this. And so we're realizing this is not just a miracle. This is a whole series of miracles. Mm-hmm. And it revolutionized his ministry in terms of his witness and his prayer life and all those other kinds of things. So it's the gift that keeps on giving. It's just a remarkable story.
And Dick prayed specifically.
He did. He prayed that Don would have a meaningful life. He said, it's very apparent the orthopedic injuries are catastrophic, but Lord, please allow him to live a meaningful life. At that time, Don was bleeding from his eyes, nose, ears, and mouth, all you know, signs of traumatic brain injury. The steering wheel was crushed into his chest, should have had massive internal injuries. But Dick was praying that God would work a miracle and that Don would go on to not only live, but to live a meaningful life. And so by the time they got him to the hospital, and that took some doing to get him there, once they finally discovered that jaws of life, the whole thing, I think they took him to three different hospitals before they actually let them get him out of the ambulance. And by the time they were doing all the assessment and all, there was no brain injury, although I do question that from time to time.
I do, too. Yes.
But no internal injuries. It was the very massive orthopedic injuries that he had. And Dick's prayer has been answered so far above what we would ever expect. You know, so often we pray and we're kind of shooting low, you know, God has so much more for us. And if we'll just wait for him and listen to him and wait for him to guide us through, he has amazing things ahead of us. We would never have thought that a book that he wrote basically so he wouldn't have to talk about it again would have sold 7.5 million copies, 46 languages, and is going to be in a major motion picture here in the fall. We never expected that.
I can't wait to see the scene. I'm envisioning it in my mind's eye. The unrestrained vigorousness by which Dick must have, it's so beyond rational thinking.
It is,
you know,
not
for
rational.
For a person to have been compelled by God, now, getting under a tarp.
Yes.
To be by a dead.
With a dead body.
By a dead body with the parts strewn in various places. While we're talking about Dick, share with us about the hand that you held.
Mm. One of my favorite stories.
Yeah, I was very privileged and honored to be able to be invited to speak at Dick's church. You know, he was a pastor of a church north of Houston. My church was south of Houston. I was in leg braces by that time. The device was removed, but I wore these enormous braces that kept me from moving my knees. It just kind of was like a Frankenstein walk. And so I went to the church. The whole family went. And I literally had to be lifted up on the stage by some people so I could hold onto the pulpit. I'm kind of a mover when I preach, but that day I had to have something to hold on to stand up. So I spoke in the church and talked about all the things that we experienced that day that I was aware of. I told everybody about Dick holding onto my hand and praying in the car over the body and he was singing the song and I started singing with. So this is his home church now. So you can imagine what rejoicing and excitement there was in the church. They already knew the story, but hearing it from the person he prayed for was kind of off the scale. So we went to lunch afterwards, the whole family, his family and mine, and a lot of chit-chat, a lot of talk, because, you know, we became bonded forever at that moment, our families, when they stopped on the bridge. And now they're seeing me not fully restored, but at least functional. So we're having lunch, and I ended up sitting across the table, I think, from Anita, the real eyewitness to all of this, and she leans over and says what every preacher wants to hear, which is, I need to correct something you said in your sermon today. And that always gets your attention if you're a pastor. I'm thinking, oh Lord, what did I say? I thought I was on target. I thought I said, you know, you're kind of replaying it in your head. And she leaned over and she says, you know that part where you said Dick Honorecker got in the car, Dick, my husband, got in the car and held on to your hand and prayed over your body and you were singing, you know? I said, oh yeah. I said, a lot of it I don't remember. A lot of it's secondhand. It's been relayed to me by people on the scene. But that I distinctly remember, just really bracing that hand and singing, even though I didn't know who it was behind me singing and who was forcing me to sing. He was forcing me to sing to keep me conscious. And she said, well, it didn't happen that way. I said, what? She said, he was behind you because that's the only way he could get close to you because of the wreckage. He was not holding your hand. He put his hand on your shoulder. Of course, the only thing I didn't break was my right arm. And he said it was not physically possible for him to reach your hand. He couldn't reach your hand. You were slumped over to the right, impaled on the steering wheel, and your right hand was hanging off of the passenger seat of the car. No one could get to your hand because the car was up against the railing of the bridge. No one could get around beside the car. So he never held your hand. And I didn't really even hesitate. I said, well, someone held my hand. And she smiled at me and said, yes, someone did hold your hand. But it wasn't Dick Honorecker. So at that point, she's smiling, and I'm knowing that God has sent an angel to that car to sustain me. Dick might have been holding my shoulder and praying, and he was, and God answered his prayer. But God had sustained me through the strength and the power of one of his angels. They're everywhere. They're not just messengers. They're supporters. They're encouragers. They sustain us. I didn't know that. I felt I felt the power was coming from somewhere, but I assumed the power was coming from the man who was praying behind me because I felt he was holding my hand and it wasn't a human hand. And I didn't really wasn't gifted with that knowledge until somebody who was an eyewitness to all of it reminded me that it didn't happen. So since that time, I don't know quite how to feel about that. I don't know how to quite express that. I have people sometimes who want to come up and shake my hand and say, and I know they really mean well, I want to hold the hand of a hand that held an angel. And that's very humbling, really quite overwhelming. It's such a holy moment that, and I realize the source of the strength. I realize that God did sustain me. And still, it's a very humbling thing to think that God would personally dispatch an angel to hold your hand and get you through something. But I believe that he does. And I believed it before, but now I experienced it.
Were you aware, cognizant, when you came back from heaven?
I was only aware of the voice.
He will explain what happened in terms of his awareness when he comes back from heaven, as he describes his story in studio with us in this pre-recorded interview. Don Piper himself, along with his wife Eva, the author of the book 90 Minutes in Heaven, over 7 million copies sold, a New York Times bestseller, and a soon-to-be-released movie, 90 Minutes in Heaven. This is part two of a two-part feature with Don and Eva Piper. When we come back, yeah, you heard about God dispatching an angel to hold his hand. You're going to hear about what it's like to come back from heaven. You might think that, wow, what an amazing thing that is. He must have really been riding high, feeling like he, you know, was literally floating on the clouds emotionally and in every way. But there were physical setbacks that he had to deal with, which he will talk about when we come back. Stay with us.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath a barren sky. Leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
Danny Yamashiro Ministries presents the Good Life Partnership Club. Join today and receive Danny Yamashiro's inspirational biography, Paradise Calls, as an ebook, a slice of the Good Life CD by mail, a monthly personal letter from Danny that include inspiring devotionals, insider's access of news stories to share, and quarterly newsletters featuring guests, resources, and opportunities for ministry. Plus, a personal invitation to have dinner with Danny Yamashiro this year and a special Christmas gift exclusively for club members. All this for a minimum monthly commitment of just $25 per month at thegoodlifehawaii.com. For less than $1 per day, the Good Life Partnership Club membership will enrich you and multiply by spreading the hope of Jesus Christ to millions across the United States and the world. People like your family and friends. Join today at thegoodlifehawaii.com and click Partners. That's thegoodlifehawaii.com.
Active lifestyles are promoted for healthy living. This involves exercise and a range of sporting activities. There are times, though, when injuries take place resulting from sports, work, or even the effects of age. In some cases, surgical care is necessary to facilitate proper healing. That's the time to call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, with offices at both Polymomi and Kuakini. Dr. Calvin Oishi has treated patients with the compassion, care, and expertise second to none. Call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, 484-2042, 484-2042.
There was a time when filling up your gas tank was a full-service experience. The attendant would look under your hood, check your oil and water, check your tires, and wipe your windows, all while your tank's being filled. Burt's Union Service Station on School Street still does it. They also provide auto repair services with master mechanics to give your car the needed fixing to keep it going a long time, so your dollars stretch with a lasting, smoothly running vehicle. Visit them today. Burt's Union on School Street.
Hear me calling. Hear me calling.
listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
What would you do if you saw the glories of heaven? You heard the holy swoosh of wings and the cacophony of songs playing, but they were not just noise to you. You could hear each song independently. It was really a buffet of the senses, the way that Don Piper described it. What if you had to come back after seeing loved ones whom you hadn't seen in years, and there they are, and you can see clear gold in the gates of pearl, iridescent, pearlescent, as Don writes about in his book, 90 Minutes in Heaven. How would you feel if you had to come back? Upon coming back, he had to deal with some other kinds of realities, of which he shares in this next segment of our show. This is part two of our two-part special, 90 Minutes in Heaven, New York Times best-selling book, soon-to-be-released movie, a pre-recorded interview. So now, let's go back and listen to what Don and his wife Eva, Don and Eva Piper, have to say. Were you aware, cognizant, when you came back from heaven?
I was only aware of the voice behind me.
Which was Dick.
Yeah, because he got back in the car and continued to talk to me. And he made me sing other songs so that I would continue to be conscious. Then I began aware of all this shouting and running around outside the car because I'm still covered up. It's still raining, and they still have me covered up. And then I heard a lot of crunching glass. Well, obviously, the medical people, the police, they're running around the outside of the perimeter car, and they're crunching the glass that's been disintegrated out of the windows. And there's a lot of screaming for equipment and different things. Then I heard heavy machinery. They were sawing the roof off the car. Because the car was up against the railing of the bridge, they couldn't come in from the passenger side of the car. And because the front of the car was completely demolished, they couldn't come from that direction. The back of the car was a hatchback, and that was knocked off. So they tried to come in from that direction and then start sawing off the roof, which they eventually did. They were concerned because my left arm was just dangling. My left leg was really on the floorboard for all practical purposes. The right leg was broken, and everything was crushed down on top of me. That when they finally lifted me up, that they wanted to support those things because they felt like it would fall off if they didn't. So they had what I know was like an army of people up under me from all directions. So when they finally decided to lift me out of the car onto a gurney, I do remember that distinctly. I didn't really feel anything. I was in shock. And what I'm looking at is the bridge above me, the gurneys, crisscross metal beams of the bridge, and rain falling on my face, like head on my face. Well, I thought this was very bizarre, because my last really memory of driving under the bridge was the bridge. Oh, there's an old bridge out here. Look at this. It's got a metal superstructure over the top of it. Why would they build it? I'm asking myself questions. Now I'm flat on my back looking at the top of the bridge with rain falling in my face. And the very first time, I remember distinctly thinking to myself, something really dramatic has happened here. If I'm on my back on a bed, a gurney, on this bridge, and rain is falling on my face from the front, something horrible has happened. It's happened to me.
Did you feel pain?
No. The first time I felt pain was after the next to last hospital, the regional hospital, where they stabilized me and made arrangements to take me to the level one trauma center in Houston, 85 miles away. It was in the back of that ambulance that I experienced pain that I didn't know you could experience. It was horrific. I just didn't know you could hurt like that.
Well, you were in pain earlier than that. You just don't recall. I don't recall it. They called me out of my classroom at school. I was teaching first grade, and I was down in the they had me come down to the office, and after I was told that there had been a wreck, several friends showed up, and we started calling hospitals everywhere trying to find out, because all we knew was there'd been a wreck. Finally, they called from Huntsville Memorial and said, "We have a Mr. Piper here. I understand Mrs. Piper teaches. Would she like to talk with him?" Of course, I did. And the nurse said, "We're going to put the phone next to his ear. He can't hold it himself, but at least you can communicate." So I, you know, as soon as I heard the kind of rustling, you know, and I started in with the typical wife questions: "What happened? How are you? You know, what's going on? What's hurt? This, that, and the other." And he just started saying, "I just want to go home. I just want to go home." And then it was moans and groans. And I knew that something really bad had happened, because Don's has an incredibly high tolerance for pain, and never really very vocal about anything that bothered him. He's very stoic. Mm. So to hear those moans and groans coming out of him really just did a number on me, as far as realizing we've got a serious situation here. I will say this. When I walked into that office, and the vice principal got up and walked around from her desk, and she put her arms around me, and she said, "Eva, I'm so sorry to tell you that the church is called and there's been a wreck." It was an immediate feeling that God was saying, "Eva, this is going to be okay. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard. I'm with you. Don has two broken legs and a broken arm." At that point, we didn't even know what hospital he was in. And so after, you know, I handed the phone back to someone after I'd heard all this moaning and groaning, and my friend Susan was on the phone, and she's an RN, and she hangs up from the hospital, and she says, "They're going to assess Don, and then they're going to transport him to Houston to Level 1 Trauma Center. They do know he has two broken legs and a broken arm." Now, see, what I get from that is God gave me those concrete facts to show, "See, I got this," mm-hmm. for me to hold on to the fact that he had promised me things were going to be okay. Now, I admit there were times when I was saying, this does not look very okay, God. I don't get this. I don't see how we're going to make it through, and I don't understand how he's going to survive." But God was always faithful to come back to that promise that he's going to take us through that, and he's done that to this day. God is a God who is just waiting to talk to us, but we don't do a very good job of being still enough to listen. And sometimes it takes a tragedy for him to really get through to us, to be willing to open our ears to hear what he has to say. But I was so thankful for that comforting thought, that comforting. I can't tell you what God's voice sounds like, but I can tell you when you hear it, you know who it is. Mm.
Dr. Ilizarov.
Yes.
He creates a device, invents a device, a bone growth device.
Right.
That becomes very meaningful to you, Don Piper.
Mm-hmm.
What was this device, and how so?
I wish I could have got my hands on Dr. Ilizarov. He was a physician in Siberia. And this was in the Soviet Union era. Apparently, and understandably, a lot of people in Siberia fall down ice and break limbs badly. We're talking about compound fractures here, both probably forearms and legs. And so, you know, in his research, he determined that he was going to save limbs instead of just having to amputate. And he was very much aware of the fact that the femur in the human body is by far the biggest bone in the human body. Male or female, doesn't matter. It's just very, very difficult to break a femur. It's very large. And, you know, an adult male, it's almost as big as your wrist. You know, it's a very large bone. And but when it is broken, you have a special set of circumstances. It's how do you fix this? if you have to do bone grafts or bone transplants, there is no other place to take this from. You know, we have ribs, we have pelvis, we have a lot of things that are places that you can harvest bones and move them to other places. I have some of those too, because I broke other bones. But in the case of a femur, it's very difficult. When that dashboard collapsed on my left leg, it was like an implosion. It caused 4.5 inches of femur to disappear. It just literally, from the angle of the impact, the bone was ejected from the leg, went through where the window used to be, over the railing, and into the water of the below. So there was no bone left. Well, that presents a very unique problem. You're missing 4.5 inches of your femur just above the knee. Where would you get the bone to replace that from any other part of your anatomy? Nowhere. You've got one femur that's normal length, you have another one that's 4.5 inches short, and it's no longer connected. What he invented was a device that would surround your leg with halos of stainless steel. And in my case, I think there were 5 of them. One of them, a half halo, embedded in my pelvis just about the waist. And then there were 4 more, one going past my knee. These are halos, stainless steel, circles of steel that surround you. Then wire the size of an ice pick. It's not like a pencil, smaller than that. It actually is embedded on one side of the halo. It goes through the flesh, muscles, bone, emerges on the other side, and is attached to the other side of the circle of steel that's surrounding your leg. Then another one crisscrosses so that there's an X of steel crossing in the middle of your femur, holding that bone.
If you're listening right now, I know this is very graphic, and you can barely just imagine the indescribable, excruciating pain that he went through. Unless we go through it, I don't think we can really understand what it's like to have stainless steel ice picks, as it were, going through, and then it's going to crisscross, and it's going to do that in several places. In fact, Don Piper is going to explain further when we come back from our break what it was like. I mean, just to put the device on. And moreover, he'll explain what it took to begin the healing process, what it was like. His wife, Eva Piper, wrote a book that has recently been released, A Walk Through the Dark, How My Husband's 90 Minutes in Heaven Deepened My Faith for a Lifetime. You can get this book and 90 Minutes in Heaven at 90minutesinheaven.com. Stay with us. We'll be back with more.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky. Leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
Have you heard the stories on the Good Life Hawaii radio show with Danny Amashiro and his guests?
Yup. I listen to Danny's show every day. Those testimonies inspire me in my life at work, with my family, and in my relationship with God.
Did you ever visit thegoodlifehawaii.com? There's all kinds of resources there. Danny Amashiro has interviewed hundreds of guests on subjects like parenting, business, relationships, depression, overcoming addiction, hope, and so much more.
As a matter of fact, I have. Did you know there are videos where Danny prays for your family, your finances, even a video I've used to help lead my friends to Christ?
Wow. And I hear Danny is offering special opportunities and benefits for his Good Life Partnership Club members.
Yep. Go to thegoodlifehawaii.com and remember to connect with Danny on Facebook. Follow him on Twitter, too. That's Danny Yamashiro.
I'm going to visit thegoodlifehawaii.com today.
A healthy smile can make all the difference, but where do you go for healthy teeth? Dr. Kerry Ishihara is a specialist in general dentistry in Waihua. With more than 20 years of experience, Dr. Ishihara serves the people of Waihua, including a special focus on military families. As a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserves, he understands the needs of soldiers and families in our military community. The Good Life Hawaii radio show is proud to have Dr. Kerry Ishihara as an anchor sponsor. Call him at 621-8281. That's 621-8281.
Do you need a specialist in cosmetic dentistry? Someone who can bring the best in you from the inside out. Let Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa help you. His warmth, compassion, and expertise provides all the assurance needed for your dental needs. Visit Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry in Kaneohe. Call him at 235-4525 to make an appointment today. That's 235-4525. Or visit jeffmiyazawa.com. Windward Family Dentistry, where a lifetime of smiles is created.
In times of economic challenge, opportunities arise. All we need is someone to say, "I believe in you." Michael Beasley, a senior executive of Kaiani Team Aloha, has seen Kaiani products improve the quality of people's lives. Michael Beasley says Kaiani's mission is to empower people globally to experience better health, wealth, and a lot of fun. Contact Michael Beasley at 277-9528. Live outside the 9-to-5 workday. Become the CEO of your own business while Kaiani handles the details. That's Michael Beasley at 277-9528. 277-9528. Active lifestyles are promoted for healthy living. There are times when injuries take place. In some cases, surgical care is necessary. That's the time to call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi with offices at both Palimomi and Kuakini. Call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi at 484-2042, 484-2042.
Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
It is an unimaginably grisly scene when you consider stainless steel halos around your leg, the entire length of your leg, a half a halo around your pelvis, and then all the way down your leg, five halos altogether, with stainless steel rods the size of an ice pick crisscrossing through the flesh, through the muscle tissue, through the bones, onto the other side. In fact, Don Piper describes this in this part two of a two-part feature. Why, Danny, you say, why go through all these details? Well, when you talk about survival and making it through and suffering and serving people with the love of Christ, you'll understand his heart all the more. Don and Eva Piper are my guests in this pre-recorded interview. You can find out more about them and get their resources, 90minutesinheaven.com. That's where you can get it. A new movie is coming out shortly, 90 Minutes in Heaven. Now we go back to Don and Eva Piper.
And in my case, I think there were five of them. One of them, a half halo embedded in my pelvis, just about the waist. And then there were four more, one going past my knee. These are halos, stainless steel, circles of steel that surround you. Then wire the size of an ice pick. It's not like a pencil, smaller than that. It actually is embedded on one side of the halo. It goes through the flesh, muscles, bone, emerges on the other side, and is attached to the other side of the circle of steel that's surrounding your leg. Then another one crisscrosses so that there's an X of steel crossing in the middle of your femur, holding that bone in place as if it was still connected to the bottom part. So three are connected above the break, two are connected below the break. Then they break your leg in another place. They actually saw it in two at an angle, kind of a green tree angle. Between where your leg is broken, missing bone, and the hip. Now they turn screws on these halos every day, four times a day, and they cause the halos on your leg, the bottom ones, to move closer together. trying to bridge the gap where the missing bone is. And then new bone begins to grow where the new break is. It's now being stretched and your bone is replaced slowly. Then it calcifies, so you end up having a new section of bone, hopefully equal to the amount that's missing in the lower part of your leg.
Now, this wasn't fully developed in...
No. You
were, in a way, part of the experiment of its development, right?
It was patented 3 weeks before my accident. So it was technology in development. It had been sent to Italy. They worked on it, and the Italians, doctors did. And so it was still in the process of being perfected. It is much more perfected nowadays. And if you, you know, if you get around at all, you've seen people in wheelchairs with rods sticking out of their ankles, maybe an elbow, maybe they've even broken their neck and they have halos on their head. Mm-hmm. It's all the same kind of technology, except this is a femur. It's on your thigh, that part of your leg.
I want to get back. I'm hearing it and wincing, and I'm wincing. But the description of the pain. But before we get to that, Eva, you had to make a decision. What were your choices, and why did you decide the way that you did?
Don developed double pneumonia about the second week that he was in ICU. In order to do the breathing treatments, they needed to elevate him so that they could do the hand compressions against his chest to break up that mucus in his lungs. And the doctor came to me and said because of the missing femur, it was impossible to elevate him because there was nothing to support him to sit him up. And I had two choices, amputate the leg or do this new device. He explained it to me as an exoskeleton, kind of like an insect, kind of hard. That's really all I remember hearing. As far as the description of it, I did not get, and maybe he told me, and knowing the doctor, Dr. Greider, he probably did, but when you're in the middle of all of this, you don't always hear details. He told me we needed to make the decision quickly, and he's handing me a clipboard to sign one place or the other. My thoughts were Don loved to walk. He loved to play tennis. He loved to ride a bike. He liked to snow ski. He was a person who was just, and still is very driven. And so in my thought process was, if he has his own limb, he'll have a better chance of doing those things. I spent as much time in prayer as I could, but it was one of the first big decisions I had ever had to make. Don and I had been married, like I said, 15 years, and all that time I'd never paid a bill. I'd had no idea about what kind of insurance we had. He handled all of that. I felt like I had my hands full, three children, teaching school, being a pastor's wife, and so I left all of that other stuff to him. It's not that he tried to keep it from me. I just really wasn't very interested in it. So here I am now, in a position of having to make one of the most crucial decisions of our lives. And I did make that decision to put that device on. The first question that Don asked when he woke up was, do those wires go all the way through my leg? And I, yes, they do. And then the second question, which was a question I heard very often, why did you let them do this to me? It's a hard question to hear. But I've learned that when you're in a caregiving situation, a crisis, that you have to make the best decision you can at that moment, and you can't waste energy going back and rethinking things. You have to keep moving forward. For the most part, I'm very glad that he has his limb. I wish he had not had to endure what he had to endure. No one should have to go through that. And I don't think anyone really understands. They don't see, we talk about turning the screws. What they don't understand is those wires not only went through, they had to be pulled through the flesh and the muscle as those bones were grown back together. So he still has the scars showing where those screws were turned every day. And I had to do that. I had to learn how to do that, because once we got him home, he still had the device on. And that was one of my jobs, was to clear clean the pinholes. You had to keep the flesh from adhering to those wires, and then turn those screws four times a day. Something that no wife should ever have to do, but yet so thankful that technology was developed so that he still has his own leg today.
The pain. How do you articulate the pain?
I don't think there's any words for it. And, you know, there's different kinds of pain, emotional pain, physical pain, even psychological pain, I think. Even spiritual pain, I think. So pain kind of is a transcendent type thing. I had a doctor actually tell me one time when I was kind of talking about how painful it was. He said, well, it just means you're alive. And I thought, that's one of the most absurd things I've ever heard. If pain means you're alive, I must be one of the most living persons on the planet. Because it was just overwhelming. It was numbing. It was just brutal. It was just a brutal, grueling kind of pain. And it was continuous to the point you just almost feel numb to it over a period of time. And yet you can't move without it. I mean, I didn't go to sleep for months. You say, well, you must have. Well, no, I passed out. I passed out. Now, I was on a morphine drip for a long time, what's called a PC pump, which means you can give yourself shots, obviously up to a point, and then the machine shuts off because you couldn't keep doing it. And in spite of that...
And we think we experience pain, and it's real pain that we experience in certain points of our life. Hearing someone describe what they've gone through gives us a new perspective. It certainly does me. Does it give you a new perspective as well? How about as a caregiver? Eva Piper. Boy, did you hear that? Wasn't it touching to hear how she had to process? She wrote a book, A Walk Through the Dark. How my husband's 90 Minutes in Heaven deepened my faith for a lifetime. It's available at 90minutesinheaven.com. That, and along with 90 Minutes in Heaven, the book by Dawn Piper. Dawn and Eva Piper are in studio with me. When we come back, more description on the healing process. It's not only physical healing. There's emotional healing that comes along with it, spiritual, psychological, all of that. And find out what God does in a person in the process. We can gain much from stories like this, testimonies like Dawn and Eva Piper's. Stay with us. We'll be back with much more.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky. Leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
Danny Yamashiro Ministries presents the Good Life Partnership Club. Join today and receive Danny Yamashiro's inspirational biography, Paradise Calls, as an ebook. A slice of the Good Life CD by mail, a monthly personal letter from Danny that include inspiring devotionals, insider's access of new stories to share, and quarterly newsletters featuring guests, resources, and opportunities for ministry. Plus, a personal invitation to have dinner with Danny Yamashiro this year, and a special Christmas gift exclusively for club members. All this for a minimum monthly commitment of just $25 per month at thegoodlifehawaii.com. For less than $1 per day, the Good Life Partnership Club membership will enrich you and multiply by spreading the hope of Jesus Christ to millions across the United States and the world. People like your family and friends. Join today at thegoodlifehawaii.com and click Partners. That's thegoodlifehawaii.com.
Hi, this is Danny Yamashiro. Many people tell me how the Good Life Hawaii radio show has made a difference in their lives. How they've shared our free podcast with friends and family from thegoodlifehawaii.com. Others have connected on Facebook and Twitter. This is made possible through our corporate sponsors. Mahalo to Wahiwa dentist Dr. Kerry Ishihara, Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry, Burt's Union Service Station on School Street, Michael Beasley of Kaiani, Fran Villarmia Kahavai of Properties International Limited, Chinen and Arinaga Financial Group Incorporated, L&S Marine Services Consultants, Arsina Kailihiva of Purium, and orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi. To find out how to become a corporate sponsor, click partners at thegoodlifehawaii.com. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show, Hawaii's only local inspirational Christian talk show on 99.5 The Word, weekdays at 2 p.m. and 12 midnight, providing opportunities to connect family and friends with Jesus Christ.
Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special
guests. Yes, there are
guests.
Moments when God allows certain people to suffer greatly, and it's so that we don't have to suffer greatly. And learn lessons from what they have to share based on their experiences. And that's the case with Don Piper. Don and his wife Eva are in studio with me in this pre-recorded interview as they talk about, well, much of what is some of the behind the scenes, rarely spoken about things with regard to the book 90 Minutes in Heaven. You can find out more about their book and his speaking and other resources that exist there, including a new book by Eva Piper, who is, for anybody who's a caregiver, she writes, A Walk Through the Dark, How My Husband's 90 Minutes in Heaven Deepened My Faith for a Lifetime. Well, they're here with us, Don and Eva Piper. Let's listen in to more of what they have to share.
Go to sleep for months. You say, well, you must have. Well, no, I passed out. I passed out. Now, I was on a morphine drip for a long time, what's called a PC pump, which means you can give yourself shots, obviously up to a point, and then the machine shuts off because you couldn't keep doing it. And in spite of that, it was still overwhelmingly painful. So I can't even conceive what it must have been like. Nurses would come in and say, Mr. Piper, how are you doing? And I would say, I'm okay. And they would even supplement it with shots. And, I've had nurses say, you know, I've given you enough pain medication or sleeping medication to put a horse to sleep. And you're still awake. And I would look at them, and I didn't want to say anything not nice or unkind, but I thought, have you ever had one of these things before? Then you don't know what this is like. You move when you sleep. We all do. All humans move around when we sleep. I couldn't move when I slept because this thing is embedded in me, and I've also had one in my arm at the time. So if I kind of lost consciousness by just kind of passing out, I might be asleep for 10 minutes or I might be asleep for 3 hours. But then in the process of being unconscious and trying to move, I would shock myself awake. Because I was trying to move, the devices weren't moving, and they would tear open the flesh. So you would start the process all over again. So I never had any regular sleeping patterns. I never had any regular rest. It was just continuous, get through another 24-hour period, whatever that 24-hour period comprised. You know, forget sunrise, sunset, or anything like that. So it was, I've said this, and I'm trying to do it in a measured kind of way. If there really is a greater physical pain than this, I can't imagine what it would be like. I can't imagine how anyone could endure it, except Christ. You know, we know because we have evidence and we have the description of what he went through, and so that's kind of my yardstick for that. You know, even though it was just incredibly painful and difficult. Christ, who suffered so much more than that, and so it kind of puts it in perspective for me. Now, as a pastor, I've been in hospitals to visit people all my life. I've held the hands of AIDS victims. I've held the hands of people in critical condition, and I have held hands as people went out into eternity. I've seen hideous and horrible things with children and all sorts of things. So I do have an understanding of what it is like to suffer. Personally, it was very difficult.
A contrast. to 90 Minutes in Heaven. And here you are in unspeakable, excruciating, inexpressible, insane pain. How did it affect you emotionally?
Oh, wow. You're really wondering off. This is really difficult stuff now. I'm not sure I've ever fully dealt with it, to be perfectly honest with you. There are times when it rises to the surface. Sometimes when the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak, you know, and I'm trying. I know I have to be somewhere and I have something to do. Sometimes in the still of night, I will will myself to get up and I can't. I don't, you know, the scars are there, inside and out. And of course, that's one of the beauties about heaven is there are no scars for any of us in heaven, inside or out. But they're, both of them are there for me. I mean, I've had my kids, when I'm with them sometimes, be very defensive on my part because people will be staring at something on me, maybe my arm or my leg, or they'll notice I'm shorter on one side than the other, and somebody will be staring at me. My kids want to go get them. You know, they don't they don't want anybody staring at their daddy like this. So in some cases, it's worse for other people than it is for me because I just kind of getting through another day. And there's no glory in martyrdom. I mean, it's just the way it is. And as Eva said, I have a fairly high threshold for that kind of thing. I always have. So it's probably better that it happened to me than someone else, you know, because I'm pretty tough at doing that. I probably inherited it from my dad. Because my mother certainly doesn't have it. She had a lot of trouble looking at me this way from the very beginning. But it's tough. It remains tough. The only thing it does for me is I think it gives me an extraordinary sensitivity to other people's pain, no matter what the pain is.
People experience various levels of emotional pain much more today.
Yes.
In various ways, suffer from depression.
Yes.
And depression can become very dark. It's perhaps an unspeakable darkness, to say it that way. What would you say to someone who is depressed and not only can they not go on, they do not want to go on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was never suicidal in the sense I wanted to take my own life, but I didn't want to be here. I really didn't want to be here. And it wasn't at the expense of the people that I loved and the people I have come to love since that time. I don't love them any less. I enjoy being with them. I don't want them to go anywhere, and I certainly don't want to lose them. But I didn't want to be here. I because I had seen what happens next, because I came back to really a very difficult time, and I was categorically depressed. I mean, this is textbook depression. And I had seen it with my own eyes as a pastor for years, but I really never thought it would happen to me. I mean, they were very concerned about it. I mean, they sent people in to talk to me, and you get paranoid after a while. Like every doctor who comes in, like, I haven't seen you before. Why are you here? What do you treat? And I realized that they were asking questions of me. They were trying to determine what they could do to help me, and I knew they meant well. And I did suffer silently, so I was probably my own worst enemy in that regard. So I would counsel people who are depressed and think they are to not do that. I mean, you really do need to share with those people whose judgment you trust, what do you think's going on with me? Is this normal? And have people look at you and say, no, you need help. We can help you get some. I needed some. I was a captive audience. I was in the bed. And most of mine was because I internalized things that I needed to talk about. I internalized my visit to heaven that I didn't want to speak of because I didn't have the right words for it. I internalized the extraordinary pain and hopelessness as I was feeling. And I don't know that they did a great job of preparing me for that. They were always trying to be honest and frank with me. And frankly, their descriptions were horrible. You know, oh, well, we don't know if this is going to work. We're going to try it, and we'll see if it works. Hey, I'm a human being. I don't need to be an experiment just you can level with me, but tell me something about this that might be worthwhile. So, and maybe in fairness, it was because they really didn't know, but that probably could have been handled better. I would say to depressed people, and there are plenty of them, and I certainly have been there and still return there from time to time, is that you know the Lone Ranger had Tonto. You can't do this by yourself, and you shouldn't do this by yourself. You're going to have to find somebody whose judgment you trust and ask them hard questions. Have you noticed a difference in me? I'm having problems processing this. I'm going through a difficult time. What do you think? And you don't want to have somebody scratch your chin and say, oh, that's a shame. It needs to be somebody who says, well, I've been concerned about it too. And you'd be surprised if you start talking about it, how many people will say just that. They didn't want to hurt your feelings. They didn't want to offend you by saying something about it. But when you say something about it, then they begin to say, yeah, we've noticed that you seem to be dark. You seem to be down. You seem to be, and we need to, maybe I'll go with you if you want to go see a doctor. Or
he's speaking, Don Piper is speaking as someone who knows what it's like to endure pain, unspeakable, indescribable pain. You know, these are rare moments when you have an opportunity to speak at length with Don and Eva Piper, a couple like that, having gone through what they have gone through. And seeing where God has taken them in their ministry to minister to so many people all over the world who are struggling, and bringing the hope of Christ, the hope of heaven and what heaven is like. Well, it's a rare moment when we need to move into a third feature. And this is one of those cases. You've heard part one. You can access part one at thegoodlifehawaii.com. You can access part two, this one, same place, thegoodlifehawaii.com. But stay tuned, because part three takes us even deeper and gives us more insight into the life story of what God did through this very special couple and the hope that we can find in Jesus through what they have done, what he has done in their life. Stand by for part three with Don and Eva Piper. And until then, I hope you've been encouraged from the sharing from Don and Eva Piper. Find out more about them at 90minutesinheaven.com. You know, God's timing, as I always say, is perfect. And there's no better time than right now to share the love of Jesus with someone near you. Go and do it. And if you haven't done so, hey, this is the perfect moment for you to open your heart to the Lord Jesus Christ. Go to thegoodlifehawaii.com. I've got something there for you. Just click Get to Know Jesus. And you know, if you'd like to stand with us financially to make a donation, go to thegoodlifehawaii.com and click Partners. Psalm 3, verse 4. To the Lord I cry aloud, and he answers me from his holy hill. It's always a blessing to be with you. Special thank you to Don and Eva Piper. Find out more at 90minutesinheaven.com. Until next time, along with my technical producer, Chaz Ontai, guest coordinator, Jamie Lee Kwai, and web designer, Arlen Nagata, I'm Danny Yamashiro. Remember, the Lord is with you. Let him unleash your God-given purpose today.
Thank you for listening in on today's broadcast of The Good Life with host Danny Yamashiro. We hope that today's program has been a blessing for you. The Good Life radio program is listener supported, and we'd like to encourage you to pray about becoming a sponsor or donor. Your support makes it possible for us to continue to minister to God's people through The Good Life. To become a sponsor or to make a donation, please visit thegoodlifehawaii.org. That's thegoodlifehawaii.org. And may God richly bless you with The Good Life.